that spring and May, opposition docs in hand. Welcome to the land of old white men. Am I gonna fit in? I walk up and sit in the box for the 10th time. Look to my right, see defense counsel slime. This is all so foolish. Everybody seems so desperate. Going through the motion and I'm feeling kind of loco. Too much nonsense and I'm aggro. Meet me in chamber, said the judge. And the verbal spar was on. And the verbal spar was on. And the verbal spar was on. So I'll put my foot down, don't get it.
That was Jenny.
No, Sophie.
Was it Sophie?
Yeah.
Oh, Sophie's got skills. I love it. So welcome to our podcast. I'm EBA. I'm going to be your host. As you see, I am in the hostess chair today, taking over for Bob Simon and Brandon Simon and some of the other folks. I contemplated wearing a gown since I've seen Bob show up in a tux every so often, but I figured, you know, how about some neon pink? But we have some great guests with us today. But first of all, we have to introduce our good friend, Blake. He's going to be talking about his wonderful drink.
All right. Well, thank you, Evie. So I have the pleasure of this esteemed panel. And so based on today's panel, we have made Ma-Ma-Mosas. Right, and so this is based on each and every one of you guys being a trailblazer and a trial warrior in your own sense. So if anyone at home is playing along and they want to know what's in this, don't you worry, we'll feed you baby birds. So in Michelle and Evie, you have grapefruit. There we are. We have with Sienna, she went with a little strawberry lemonade.
Cheers.
Lindsay went straight up.
Cheers.
And Tina's a bit of a mystery, but she went with a low-cal version of hot water. Anyone wants to know how we came up with Ma-Ma-Mosas, it's to appreciate the esteemed panel. You know, each and every one of you, day in and day out, fight tirelessly on behalf of the clients, on behalf of their families, and you do everything you can to make the world a better place. But when each and every one of you transition and take off the lawyer cap, you go home and you're each phenomenal mothers. You're phenomenal spouses, and you guys are great at everything you do. So on behalf of ourselves at Simon Law, on behalf of the legal profession, keep doing what you do. Cheers.
Cheers.
That was
cheers.
Nice.
Cheers.
Thank you, Blake. I'll get out. Wow. Thank you.
Appreciate it. So let's get started here. I am so honored to be here, mostly because I'm among friends. I've known a number of you for a very long time and admire a few of you from afar for many years. So it's really good to be in this space. And as a woman trial lawyer in this community, it is very, very rare that we can come together in this sort of setting and just talk about our lives and exchange ideas. I can imagine that you all have had similar experiences where you've walked into a room and you were the only woman. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
That's fair. So, well, why don't we just formally introduce ourselves to our viewers since we know each other individually. I'm Ibieta Sek. I'm 10 years out, been practicing law here in California for some time, do primarily catastrophic injury, wrongful death, sex abuse of minors cases. And we have an incredible panel, very diverse in our practice areas and in our lives. So why don't we start with Lindsay Aiken?
Well, thank you so much for having me. My name is Lindsay, and I've been practicing for about 18 years now, and I'm a managing partner of my own firm with my husband, and we are employment law specialists representing only plaintiffs in wage and hour discrimination, harassment, you name it, we do it.
Wonderful. And then we have the wonderful $41 million lady, Sienna Calado Butte.
Oh, good job.
Thank you.
Yes, good morning. Pleasure to be here. I'm part of the justice team. I've been with them for about 2.5 years. Prior to that, I was a DA for LA County for 3.5, and I've been enjoying it every day since I switched over to civil.
Wonderful. Michelle. Who are you?
Hi.
Hi.
Michelle E. Russo. I also do employment. Unfortunately, none of my employment cases go to trial. So when I go to trial, I try PI cases and some business lit. I also have my own firm. We're out in Pasadena. And we're I'm a mom. We all talked about this earlier. I have a very family-friendly office. My partner is also a dad. He's got 2 kids, too. So we're just kind of overrun with the family stuff. So appreciating the mama-mosas.
Mama-mosas. And then we have the wonderfully talented, I like to call her the influencer of trial lawyers because of her incredible online presence.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, we have Tino Ajagian. How are you, sweetheart?
Good. It's such a pleasure to be here, and that's such a kind introduction coming from you. But, yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here among friends. Like you said, my name is Tino Ajagian. I specialize in catastrophic injury, but brain injury litigation mainly in the realm of workers' comp. I run my own practice out in Woodland Hills. It's also a very child-friendly office. I've got 2 little boys that have their own office within my office. I've got a great team of all women. It just so happened that way. The attorneys in my office are all women. Super talented.
Love
girl
it.
Power.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. I love it. So why don't we talk about, we had a chance to kind of just get to know each other a little bit better before we started this podcast. We chatted a little bit, and I feel like I've connected with you all in a very real way. We talked about our lives as mothers and some of our challenges, and we'll explore a little bit of that. But my first question for each of you is, why law? I mean, we are accomplished in our personal lives. We could do anything we want. Why this profession? Who wants to start?
I think I've said this before. Since I was a kid, I was a girl standing up against the bully on the playground, and I've always had a sense of right and wrong and standing up for those that have been wronged. And I think I negotiated my first contract at age 6 to get my first dog. So my mom was like, I knew you were going to go that route, and I kind of see it in my daughter now at 2, kind of negotiating, and I'm losing arguments to her, so I'm screwed. But yeah, I've always been part of like government and representing people. So the natural step for me was to do law.
Okay. What about you, Lindsay?
For me, it's a family business. I grew up watching my uncle. He's a trial attorney in Orange County. And my father was his case administrator for over 30 years. And I used to be a little girl, maybe 8 years old, and I would go to my uncle's office and I would help my dad bait stamp and prepare my uncle for trial. And that was back when they'd used velo form and an actual bait stamper where you had a and so I never knew I wanted to do anything other than be a lawyer. So I was really young, and I knew I was going to law school. So that's exactly what I did, straight from college, straight to law school, straight to being a baby lawyer at 25. And I always knew I'd only represent people who didn't have a voice. And so I started out doing PI Med Mal, actually, before I started employment law. Wow. So it's all I've ever wanted to do.
And here you are.
And here I am. I'm so lucky.
Okay. What about you, Michelle? Why law?
I think it's similar to, what Sienna was saying. I always wanted to stand up for people and help people. And before I became a lawyer, I worked in the food and beverage industry in New York City. And I was the victim of egregious sexual harassment, wage theft, and in fact, right before I went to law school, I was a lead plaintiff in a class action. I was working 15-hour days for a company that was making millions and millions of dollars, and I wasn't getting my hourly wage. I wasn't getting breaks. You know, we would boast about who could hold it the longest because we just couldn't get off the floor to go to the bathroom. Right. So I think, you know, that my innate sense of justice and wanting to stand up and also just what I had been through, it just kind of made sense.
Tina.
Well, I wanted to be a pop superstar, but that didn't quite work out. So, you know, no, but in all seriousness, I'm first generation. My parents moved out here in 1986. I was 11 years old. We moved out here with one suitcase. And then my dad had to be away for about 25 years working overseas to help support us. So it was tough times. It was myself, my brother, who was 5 years younger than me, and my mom, who worked, 80, 90-hour weeks. And so I really wanted to make sure that I did something to so that my kids would never have to experience that later on, and to take every opportunity that was given to me and all the sacrifices that my parents made. And so, you know, I'm Middle Eastern. It was either med school or law school. I faint at the sight of blood, so law school it was. But
yeah. Wow. Okay. So we've all been practicing for some time, and we are in a male-dominated profession, but it's increasingly becoming more and more female. And that's because there's more women going to college, or going to law school. There's more women graduating from law school, and there are more women who want to be in the courtroom. And all of you are incredible women of the courtroom. What is it that attracts you to trial lawyering, being in the courtroom?
Yes.
What is it?
So I'll go first. I was always the kid who, when you had a book report, I would never, you know, I had to go up before the class and like give the book report. I would never write it out, but I would just kill it. So I think, I love performing, and I love the storytelling aspect and really the human aspect of going to trial. When I'm in the office and talking to adjusters or talking to opposing counsel and they're trying to dehumanize my client, I don't think it gives them, it doesn't do them justice, right?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, going into the courtroom really gives me that opportunity to tell the story, to involve the rest of the community, and, you know, to give my client a chance for justice. So it's really good.
Mm-hmm. I would echo that and say I also like the thrill. Because I think we're all type A control freaks, mm-hmm. and you could prepare and do everything up until that moment when the jury walks in, and then it's game on. That little moment when they're walking in, you're standing up, and you're looking at them, that just is like game-changing, and I love the adrenaline rush. I'm a junkie for that.
Yeah. What about you, Lindsay?
I think that I like to do it because I'm scared of it. I still get very nervous. I'm incredibly nervous right now. So to me, it's just meeting that challenge, rising up and saying, yeah, I kicked your... I didn't cuss.
You didn't.
I wanted to, but I didn't.
I saw Evie bracing herself.
No, she's like, wait, Lindsay's about to drop it.
I thought she was just going to say my last name. Though. You were going to say Boutte, right?
I was going to say Boutte.
Boutte. Okay, so the thrill of being in there and challenging yourself. Is that,
yes,
is that
absolutely
right?
Okay.
While representing your client. I mean, we're all doing it for that reason.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I've fallen into this niche where I represent mainly folks who've had brain injury, right? And a lot of them have an invisible injury. Like, if you see them, they look and they sound fine. And so, I especially like the challenge of unveiling what's really going on with them, you know, despite the fact that they look completely fine. And of course I love the adrenaline and I love being in the courtroom, even though it makes me nervous as hell every time. But I can't imagine doing anything else. I'm sure part of it is that, you know, I'm a performing arts kid too. I really love that. And I love that aspect of it. And it's just one of those professions that gets to fulfill all that. You get your creative outlet, but at the same time you get to do meaningful work and help people out who really need it the most. So
so what techniques or tools have you all acquired over the course of your lives or your legal careers that have prepared you to really go into the courtroom and own a space and engage and be authentic? Where does it come from?
I mean, for me, it comes from a dark place of like struggle of being that first generation kid and having my back against the wall and, you know, going maybe week to week and month to month and just a really dark, tough place and feeling like if I got through that, I'll get through anything and just drawing on that experience when times get really hard to pull and fight on behalf of my client. You know, I don't think anything good comes from having it easy necessarily, as cliche as that sounds, but that's where it comes from for me.
I would agree. I also, first generation Panamanian, and I mean, there's times where we didn't know if our power was going to get cut off.
Right.
So doors were not opened for me because of my last name or who I was or my daddy. So I had to break down those doors. So when I go into that courtroom, I took the same bar the defense attorney did, the judge did. Right. I remember that and I just own it.
Yeah. Very good. Mm. What about you,
Ashley? I think that it's preparation. I get nervous, but I think that I've read, I've prepared, I know my case, and that's all I have to rely on myself at that point. And, you know, I've been thrown in some situations, I think in all of our early years of practice, where you knew you were going into the court and you knew that a judge was going to be really unhappy with you. And it might not have been your doing, it might have been somebody else's doing, or maybe it was your own fault, but you have to go in there and you've got to own it. And I think that all I can do at that point is rely on my preparation, rely on my gut, and do everything I can to just stay calm and explain to the court, explain to the jury, explain to whoever I need to talk to that I'm on the side of right. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the best that I can. Back off. Yeah.
Do you feel like you have to work harder than, say, like our male counterparts, that you have to prove yourself a little bit more, you have to be a little bit more prepared?
I think so. I think when you walk into court, I think there's automatically this judgment on you about what you're going to be because you're a woman lawyer. And I don't think that's right, but I think that I've experienced it. And all you can do is just be yourself. And they're either going to agree with you or they're not, but you're going to put your best foot forward and do the best that you can.
Yeah.
I just recently had an experience with my worst opposing counsel ever. He was an older man, and you know, I tend to be very defensive of my client in depositions, and you know, I'm very defensive, you know, and I've got all my cases here, and I'm like this, you know, citing everything and very meticulous about the objections that I'm making, because I really don't let the defense attorneys get away with being lazy. Like, how are you discriminated against? I'm like, whoa, why don't we talk about what happened, what they saw, not about the conversations that I had with my client explaining how they were discriminated against, right? So this most recent opposing counsel, he didn't know how to deal with that. I don't think he liked the fact that he was being challenged by me. I was completely right. Won motions to compel. And he started yelling at me. He would call me a silly little girl. And he refused to speak to me. He would only speak to my partner, who's a male.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Luckily for me, we were in front of Judge Stern, and we actually came for an FSC. And Judge Stern was like, what is going on with your trial docs? What is going on? And I said, well, Your Honor, he refuses to speak to me. And I went through the litany of this, and he's like, I didn't do that. I was like, yes, you did. And I sent you a confirming email on March 23rd saying that you did all of that. But anyway, it was very difficult. I felt how my clients often feel. But luckily for me, I have the support of my partner, and I also had the support of the judge, who ripped into him for 10 minutes and said, I want you to put that in the notice of ruling. Right. If this ever happens again, I'm reporting him to the state bar.
Nice.
That's so great.
That's good.
That's awesome.
You know, we talk a lot, or at least I think amongst ourselves as women, about some of the challenges that we face in the profession, dealing with sometimes our colleagues, opposing counsel, and judges. Do you all face those same sort of challenges, or do you feel like, you know, I don't feel like I'm treated any differently because I'm a woman, or I have a different set of skills set or anything like that?
I would like to post to the men that we work with, how often have they been confused with the court reporter, the interpreter?
Thank you.
Oh, right. My gosh.
Or
thank you.
So many times.
No offense to any of those professions, right. But automatically there's no way you could be the plaintiff's lawyer.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, how many times have we medical malpractice, personal injury, you're walking in with a suitcase full of documents sometimes back when they didn't PDF everything and nothing was on your tablet right in front of you. But I used to come in with a whole rolly bag every single time. You can set up over there.
Right.
You know, you're the court reporter.
Well, what's my experience has been is it's even
more offensive when you walk into the room and there is a court reporter there set up and they still think you're the court reporter. Like, what are you doing here? And it is a bit, you know, we hear these stories over and over again and we kind of chuckle. But I still feel like, in a lot of ways, they're troubling. Like, it, for me personally, I'm just being honest, it still bothers me. Mm-hmm. And depending on my mood that day, I address it one way, right? And other times I kind of just let it roll off my back. How do you all kind of deal with the challenges of being sometimes the only woman in the room, the person who is most likely being underestimated or overlooked? What is it? What is your armor? What is it that you take with you that kind of helps you navigate?
Well, I think you said earlier, preparation.
Yeah.
I mean, they overlook us and underestimate us, and I think that's the biggest weapon we all have because we overcompensate in preparation, but I didn't want to hijack.
Oh, no, yeah. I think that's exactly right. And I also like to highlight when it's the opposite. I went to San Pedro Court probably over a decade ago, and I walked in and I'm sitting there.
That's where I grew up.
Right. So, and I walked in and I put my card in and judges on the bench, court reporter, clerk, all women lawyers. And it was a female judge. Everybody in the courtroom was female.
Wow.
So I like to highlight when that happens.
Right.
Because that's rare, but it was exciting. And the judge actually was the first person who looked out into her courtroom and said on the record, I've never had this happen before. This is very cool. So I like to don't focus and stew on the other situation and just focus and get excited about the future, which was the future is women.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think with experience, your outlook changes, right? One of my first trials, I walked in, it was an older gentleman. I was a defense attorney back then. And he said to me, wow, you clean up nice. And I said, oh, well, thank you. And he said, how's that new job going? And I said, what the hell are you talking about? And so he had mistaken me for his client. He thought I was a plaintiff. And then when he realized I wasn't, we went through the whole list of, well, you missed the interpreter. You sit right there. I said, no. Court reporter, no. And so I told him, you know, I was very defensive back then, and I was young, and I had a chip on my shoulder, and I had something to prove. And I told him, no, I'm your opposing counsel, and I'm going to kick your bleep, you know. But now I think I walk in the room, and I'm maybe less reactive because I'm more comfortable in my own skin, and I kind of don't care what they think of what I'm wearing or how I'm presenting myself. I'm as prepared as I'm going to be, and I'm going to kick butt, and I believe it. And if I don't, I go to the restroom and do my affirmations, and I believe it. But, you know, and I try to focus on that, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to when we're young and kind of early on in our careers and feel like we need everyone's approval. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I can relate.
Well said.
Yeah, definitely.
Very well said.
Michelle?
So most of my you know, conflict happens in depositions. So the way I handle it is I online shop. I will not look opposing counsel in the eye because otherwise it starts a fight. I'm, you know, it's like I get very aggressive and I know myself. So I'm like, let me just not make eye contact.
Right.
Let me just do, I'm listening, you know, do my objections. And that way I don't have to get into the conflict because it happens a lot. Defense attorneys, especially, you know, the older ones are just used to getting away with so much. And then, and I don't let them, so.
So I was the chair of CALA's Consumer Attorneys of Los Angeles Women's Roundtable for several years. And one of the things, we used to get together quarterly as a group. We'd come in and have speakers. But one of the ongoing themes that I heard was how we as women treat one another. Women trialers, how we treat one another. And I want to get your thoughts on how are we doing, the state of affairs. How are we engaging with one another, both on the plaintiff side and defense side? Are we supportive of one another? Could we be doing better? What have your experiences been? And, you know, let's educate people on how we can improve.
Well, I think we unfortunately can be our own worst enemy, right? Women can be competitive, can be unkind to one another, but I think, again, after 16 years of practice, I'm learning you get what you put out, right? And so if you're putting out good energy, if you're mentoring, if you're giving back, you know, and I try to do that. I sit on a couple of boards. I'm active through the Armenian Bar Association. Then you'll find that you're getting the same kind of energy back. So I've had the good fortune of having great female mentors in my life and, you know, attorneys and moms and multitaskers and you know, I have great relationships with them, and so I try to pay it forward as much as I can.
Well, go ahead.
I think we're doing great. There's a lot of boosting going on. There's a lot of positivity. Right. You know, we keep in touch when there are verdicts, settlements. You know, there's a lot of celebrating, I feel.
I think we've made progress, but there's still some issues. Like, I'm part of a Law Mamas group on Facebook, and it's fantastic, 11,000 women. I heard of a recent associate friend of mine who had a deposition, and she asked the defense attorney, hey, can I, or actually plaintiff's counsel, she's a defense attorney, if they could do the depo at her office because she has to pump during the break. And she said, no, I'm not going to come any. She's like, well, can I go to your office and like pump in a certain room? She's like, yeah, the bathroom's available. Mm. Well, and that was just really harsh to hear that a fellow woman, mom, is not being supportive and can't accommodate. So, I mean, karma, you know?
Right. Unfortunate, yeah.
And gotta wonder what her motivation is. Is she trying to live up to something? Is she, does she think that that's how a man would be and she's trying to do that? And that's really sad for her that she feels that she needs to behave that way when that's just completely ridiculous. And that goes against what we are as attorneys, as humans. It shouldn't be male-female situation.
But I've been very fortunate, very positive mentors, colleagues that I like, love working, and it's like girl power, yay.
Yeah.
I went to the women's conference last summer. In Huntington Beach. And that was great. And that was really powerful and uplifting and just seeing all these women and realizing, okay, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. I'm juggling children. I'm juggling a law firm. I'm juggling a practice and a house. And I can do this and this is great. It was so uplifting and so powerful. And so I think that maybe one thing we could do is make sure that we as women continue to get together once a year in a big conference in a nice hotel and have some time to lift each other up and give each other advice, and so we all know that we're coming from the same place.
Well, my experience when I started, I had my first child my second year in practice, and I remember feeling terrified when I got pregnant, thinking, what's going to happen to my career? What are people going to think? Am I going to get cases? Are people going to trust me with their cases? Are people going to feel like I'm committed? And I remember looking around and not being able to identify a single woman who was both a mother and a trial lawyer, and how scary that was for me. And I bring this up now because I'm now in a room with four phenomenal women who are trial lawyers, and each of you are mothers. And I want to know what your experience has been like as both mothers and trial lawyers. And do you feel like you get the support that you need in order to do the work that we are tasked with doing each and every day?
I think it's a constant struggle. I too shared the same fears. I didn't want to get pregnant until I got promoted, so it wouldn't affect my promotion previously. But when I got pregnant, I was rocking that belly. All my cases settled. No one wanted to try a case with a pregnant woman. You have instant credibility, just so you know.
Absolutely. Juries love bellies.
Yeah. I think it's a struggle. It's like when I go away for a trial, it's good for me to be away because my kid doesn't see me. But I don't know if you have this issue when you're in trial and you come home at 5, you have to go into mommy mode and your kid doesn't understand that you have to prep and, you know, work for the next day. So if she's fighting me all night or she's sick, I don't get any rest. And I'm just burning the midnight oil for 2-3 weeks. So my husband and I have decided that when I'm in trial, he's not working overtime and he tries to stay at home with her as best we can to balance it out.
Yeah.
I got really lucky because when I had my first daughter, it was a huge struggle. And I remember that I had a binding arbitration. I was solo on and I was prepping and I missed her first birthday. I mean, we had a birthday party for her 2 days beforehand, but her actual birthday, I was up and out of the house by 6 a.m. and I wasn't going to get home till after 9, and she was down and she was not going to be awake. I was actually going to get to hug or kiss my daughter on her first birthday. And I remember I cried, like, I just sobbed in my conference room for the attorney I was working for at the time, who was a great, great attorney, but this was my opportunity to do something to contribute to my firm, and I had to do that. And I was on the phone with my best friend, and I couldn't tell my husband how upset I was, but I told my best friend. And when I got home, he had gone to the store. He had flowers for me, and he had we had a babysitter living with us through that Barb Brining Arb to help me out, and they woke her up and brought her downstairs to me so I could hug my daughter, which was so against, like, my rules. Like, you don't wake a sleeping baby. but that's the kind of thing where I'm married to an attorney, so when we had our second kid, that's when I knew that I needed to have my own practice and I needed to have the flexibility that ownership gives for me and my family and the way that we make it work.
I see heads nodding furiously.
So, and my husband now, he does a lot of our trial work now, and I'm assisting, I'm prep, I'm in the courtroom as much as I can and will be, but I'm also now, I'm attesting to the balancing act that there's, you can't always do everything.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I mean, look, people ask, how do you do it all? And all you ladies do it all, right? And some's got to give, and it does give every day. You just got to make sure that you can live with it. And people will tell you can't have it all, you know, just because they can't have it all doesn't mean you can't have it all. You just have to be peace with it at the end of the day. And honestly, what rules? There are no rules. You make your own rules, right? Yeah. So I have my kids picked up from school by their nanny. They come to my office on days that I don't have any meetings. They do their homework in their office, in my office. I get to hug them, kiss them, spend time with them. And, you know, I try to never miss a basketball game because that's a big thing. I never did team sports growing up. You know, that wasn't a thing. And all we can do is try to improve every generation as much as we can. But the truth of the matter is I take comfort in the fact that, you know, I've got two boys and I'm setting an example for them of what hard work looks like. And I'm showing them, you know, what a strong woman looks like. They come out to all my conferences. If mommy's got a speaking engagement, they come watch me in my element. And I just think it's so important to set that example for them. And if once in a while I don't make it to something I really want to, like you, you know, I'm devastated about it, but I just remind myself of that, you know? Yeah. So.
Absolutely. The same here. You know, my girls know mommy helps people. They know that mommy's the boss or one of the bosses. They always ask me if I can fire my partner, and I say, no, I can't fire him. you know, and I make it a real, you know, it's a family business. So, you know, they get to feel a part of it. They can come over. You know, they like to, you know, go through depositions. And my 10-year-old's very precocious. And, you know, they love it. They've seen me do a closing argument. My oldest watched, my youngest fell asleep. They've come to another trial to hear the reading of the verdict. You know, so I like to keep them involved. So, you know, they know that even if I'm not there, that I'm doing good things.
And Sienna, for you're a member of the justice team. How important is it to be in an environment where it is family oriented and people understand what it's like to?
It's a best. I mean, that's why I switched over when Bob's like, you could do trials and work from home. I'm like, what? So yeah, I might leave early, like I did yesterday, to go take my daughter ice skating. But I'll stay up late at night when she goes to bed to do my depots and review it stuff. They don't really care as long as the job gets done. Obviously, when I'm in trial, all bets are off, and it's craziness and chaos, but it's organized chaos. I try to, like, set up everything before I go to trial for 2 weeks. But, yeah, this is why I love working here, because family first. If I have my kids in the hospital and I have a depot, 5 people will jump. I'll take care of it. So we all have children around the same age, mm-hmm. and we all get it. So yeah. it's super comforting, life changing.
I get this question a lot, especially now from that we're seeing more women in the practice who want to be trialers. People send me emails and say, "Hey, EB, you know, I know you're a mom and you're trying cases, and can I take you to lunch? Can we talk?" And we sit down, and one of the first questions I get is, how do you balance it?
And I'm so conflicted because I want to be authentic and say, you know, like, I don't. Like, yeah. I don't. It just looked like I have it together, but I really don't. And I'm looking at Michelle because we literally had this exchange over text message. I think it was last weekend because we're at the TVI seminar. Hi, Tina. We saw you there. We had a good time. We were all there. And I have a daughter who's a year and 4 months. And so I don't spend many nights away, but I had negotiated to be away for a couple of days. And feeling conflicted about being there, right? While I'm there, I'm like, oh gosh, I really should be home. And like you, Tina, I don't miss basketball games. My son is club soccer. He's a pro. I love him to death, so I make every effort to get to where he is whenever I can. Having to leave the conference early and then feeling conflicted on the way home about leaving the conference early, thinking about all the opportunities that I missed in networking. And I was telling Michelle, like, I'm constantly in this space where I'm like, where do I go? What do I do? Am I doing the right thing? Am I nurturing my son the way I should? Am I being responsive? Is my husband happy? Is my home clean? You know, did I do my nails? You know, just stuff. Girl, you, I already know you did your nails.
I did. Mine are busted.
Yeah, okay, but point is that some of us are better at it than others. And I will just be totally frank. I haven't quite mastered the art of balancing this. So I am open to any and all suggestions. Please
preach.
Please, yes. Let me know.
How do you do it?
What do we do?
Get help. I'm a big proponent of help. If you need it, you get it. I've always had a live-in, not because I don't want to do the work myself, but because it's comforting for me. Even if my parents are coming to watch my kids, I know that there's someone who's responsible who's not 80 who's there to take care of them. Or if I need to jump into the other room to grab a phone call or something with work, because when you run your own business, look, it doesn't stop at you know, 5 o'clock. Right. I've got the support there. I think support is really, really important. You know, I am embarrassed to say, but I get driven to a lot of my appearances and stuff. I don't drive myself because I'm constantly texting and emailing, doing what I need to do on the road. And it's not safe for me to do that. And at first I felt obnoxious, like, you know, you're this first generation kid who had the most busted car in the school parking lot. What right do you have to be chauffeured around? But you know what? You've earned it. You work mm-hmm. really hard. You've earned it. And another thing, you know, going back to that TBI Med Legal Conference, you can't have FOMO. You can't have fear of missing out. Yeah. You're a force, CB. Everyone knows how amazing you are. And you just sometimes got to say no. And if you can't be in all places and at all times, and if something doesn't end up being your platform, you create your own platform. You're a force. You know what I mean?
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
Well said.
Thank you. Michelle, yeah.
We talked about the live-in situation. You know, when
Michelle and I don't know what we're going to do, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, when I first started my practice, I had, a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. My kids are only 16 months apart. And it was actually cheaper for me to have the live-in than it was to get the childcare that I need. Because, you know, you have to go to Bakersfield at 8:30 in the morning. You know, you're mm-hmm. who's going to take your kid at 6 a.m.? It's just not possible. Now that my kids are a little bit older, what I do and the way that I balance it and spend time with them is that I will have epic sleepovers. And my other mom friends know this. And when I am home and I'm available, I say, give me your kids. I hang out with their kids. I hang out with my kids. And then you know what happens when I have to go to TBI Med Legal? I call up my friend. I say, hey, guess what? Take my kids. And they do. And so it's good to have that kind of community support. And I also have, you know, I have the same babysitter I've had forever. You know, my mom lives with me. I'm divorced, but I have a really great relationship with my ex-husband. Call him up. I said, hey, I'm going to Ventura for 5 weeks. Let's figure this out. He's like, no problem. So it really is about the support and getting that community. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And take them. You've got a one-year-old, but once she's a little bit older, you can take her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with my son, he was with me. I mean, I did not leave the city without him. Mm-hmm. He was with me all the time. If I was on the West Coast, my sister, or I'm on the East Coast, my sister was coming down from Jersey. If I was on the West Coast, my mom was coming down from Seattle. And so, you know, it's a challenge. My son, who's a little bit harder because he's a boy and he's like always dirty. I have to be careful. So I had a meeting the other night and I'm on my way downtown to my meeting and my husband, who is wonderful. You probably never see him because he is always holding it down. But he calls me and he says, you know, hey, I can't pick up the kids today. I said, what? I have a meeting downtown. What am I going to do? And he says, you know, we got to figure this out. And I said, do I phone it in? I was like, no, I can't phone it in. So let me go get him. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm going to have to take these two children to this meeting. And with my son, my first thought is like, is he presentable? Because these are real questions I've asked when I picked him up. Whose shoes do you have on? Where are your pants? Where is the last place you saw your tooth? Why did you pull off your fingernail? So, like, I have to have a backup plan. I have clothes stashed in the trunk in the event that I need to pick him up and take him someplace. The beautiful thing about it is that he knows, like Michelle's girls do, what I do and why it's important. And I try to involve him in everything. So my daughter, she's still a baby and she's cute and people want to hold her. And it's like, so I can actually walk into a meeting and say, hey, I'm going to be in the room down the hall for about 40 minutes. Can you feed her? And I get that. But it's still very much a challenge. And I haven't quite gotten to that point where I feel like I've given myself permission to ask for help because I've been so independent for so long and I feel like I've been doing it. And I imagine that you all can relate the idea that we want to have control and giving it over to someone else. So it's hard. But Sienna, I know that you have these same issues. So please tell me, Lindsay, please. Like I'm taking it all in. I'm gonna have to do this whole chauffeur thing. Like at least Uber. This is earth shattering.
We're here.
right.
I think we've bonded over this too. And every week is a struggle. It depends on what I have going on to adjust. So I can't say that I have it completely on lock. And I'm lucky that my mom lives with us. And she's like, oh, I gotta go to San Bernardino at 5 a.m. And she's got the baby. But yeah, I think asking for help and having accommodations at work and flexible hours is huge, but I don't really have the answer to your question because I'm still trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lindsay.
No idea.
Oh, I was going to say one thing. Okay. We're not alone. We did the men panel, the trial lawyer panel, all the men had daddy guilt too when they have conferences and they're in trial in a way. So we're not alone.
Yeah.
I understand the guilt part too. I mean, I go to the Palm Springs seminar every year and I bring my children and I have guilt that I'm over in the conference center and they're in the pool having a great time ordering poolside ices. They are happy as can be. And I'm over in the other place having guilt that I'm not in the pool with them.
Right.
Guilt knows no bounds. Yeah. Right. You're always going to have guilt. I've decided to stop having guilt. Mm. You know, I mean, my kids are great. I get a lot of compliments about my children. My husband and I make it work. And I've decided, you know what? I do the best now, granted. Of course, I still have guilt. But I'm trying to not have any more guilt because we all just have to do the best that we can. I don't have a driver, but I'm looking at that too.
Yeah. It can expense all the difference.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. You can expense that.
So I want to talk to you guys a little bit about just trial work, just getting into it, being in the courtroom. I know that each of you probably has your own routine, but first questions first. Nylons or no nylons?
No nylons.
Is there no?
So okay. I haven't worn nylons in an over decade.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no.
Is that for real? That's a real question.
Okay.
I wore them once and I was like,
Do you guys have recollection of when you couldn't wear pants in court? Like you could, but you were
Yeah,
you're judged by your feather female. There would be comments. Yes, you couldn't wear pants to court.
I had a trial several years ago, co-counsel. I mean, fellow plaintiff lawyer. I walk in and he looks great, like he does every day. And I have on my pants, my pantsuit, my power shirt. And he says, "Hey, Evie, you're wearing pants today." I said, "Oh, so are you." You know, like, but the idea that people comment on it, there's this expectation that you should always be in this dress or this skirt, maybe because it's perceived as more feminine, but whatever it is. But I mean, we're all here. Some are in skirts, some are in dresses, some are in pants. What are your thoughts on that? Is it, you know?
My biggest struggle as a female attorney was maternity time and dressing appropriately for court, trying to find something that was maternity and having to go to secondhand stores to find more suits. Something that I could walk into court in. And you know, you heard these stories of some women who absolutely got just dressed down by a judge because the judge didn't feel she was dressed appropriately.
Right.
She was 9 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And she's doing the best that she can. And he tried to claim
it's like,
that
I'm here.
He tried to claim that he did not know that she was pregnant. She's 9 months pregnant. Don't tell me you didn't know.
Right.
You just felt like you needed to be on your high horse putting somebody else down. So that was my biggest struggle, was when I was pregnant, trying to find something to wear that was appropriate. It never involved pantyhose. Never.
Obviously never will for Lindsay. Never will. Okay. So heels or flats?
Depends.
Ooh.
I just got a whole bunch of like old lady heels, like inch and a half.
Ferragamo's not old lady. Careful now.
They're
careful
the most comfortable now. Things I've ever put on in my life.
Okay.
I just always associated them with like older ladies at church, you know, right, Ferragamo. Right. They're very conservative. Changed my life.
Changed your life. Okay. I'm a believer. Okay. Hoops or studs?
Studs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hair down or ponytail?
Ponytail.
When I put my hair in a ponytail, I'm crossing someone. So it's like the equivalent of taking earrings off. You know what I mean?
Okay.
About to brawl. Sophie said that. I was like, so true. I'm like, oh, this is business.
Okay, so what's your routine? Like when you're going into trial or in a tough depo or you know like it's high stakes, what are you doing? You, Tina, you mentioned affirmations. You look like you wake up with affirmations on your ceiling. Like, let's go. I mean, what are we doing wrong?
And what are your affirmations? And may I borrow them?
I'm capable. I'm worthy. I'm awesome. I'm going to kick ass. Whatever I need to tell myself in that particular day, in that particular moment. I take a lot of medicine heavy depots and medicine heavy cross X's, right? Because neurosurgeons, neuropsych, all of that. And so preparation first, for sure. Mm-hmm. After that, silence. I need my space. I need silence. I need to listen to whatever kind of music I need to listen to that morning, which means I can't have any busyness going on around me. So it's not uncommon for me to get a room at the Four Seasons in Westlake, up the street, you know, like a few miles away from my house, and just sleep there the night before, you know, the big game, if I've got to do it and I can't have busyness going on around me, right? Because we've all had those nights where a kid's sick and, you know, gets up at 3 a.m. and you got trial at 8:30 and you're screwed. So you have to be able to first see, and if something's important enough, create the space to get in the right mindset for it. But going back to dressing for a second, you want to be authentic and you want to be true to yourself. I mean, with the recognition that you're not going to wear neon green shorts to court, you know, and you're aware of your audience. But I think at the end of the day, you should do what feels right to you, right? Because it gives you a certain kind of ease, and the jury sees it and the bench sees it, rather than if you're in a situation because you think you need to be in it, but you feel uncomfortable, that's perceived by you know, by the court. So, and no Ferragamos, girl. Go get those Gianvito Rossi kitten heels with the sling back. Those
hate
are cute.
Kitten heels. I hate them.
And they don't have those granny bows on them either.
Like, granny bows. I see it as like playing a part. So when I go to trial, I'll never forget this trial I had in Ventura. And I had a nurse on my panel, and I was like, she's so kind and nice. She's going to be like my juror. And afterwards, I got defense on a tough liability case. It was a zero offer. That's why I had to try it.
she came up to me and she was like, you were so aggressive. Mm. And she was just mad at me because the defense expert had put a car in his demonstration that nobody talked about, but it obscured the view. And, you know, of course, he wanted to show it to the jury. And she was just so mad at me for being so aggressive. And I was like, wow. And I've noticed that as a woman, that aggressiveness doesn't come off well.
Right.
So when I'm going to trial, I now have a whole costume, right? Mm-hmm. There's different clothes that I put on that make me feel a different way. And, mm-hmm. you know, my little Ferragamo old lady heels with my little St. John knits makes me feel really, goodness, you know.
She's named demure. Oh, my gosh. My Ann Taylor.
Me you know, too, girl.
I'm just messing with you. No, but it's a costume. It's my, I know.
She has scarves, too. She has scarves.
What's wrong with scarves?
So, I agree. I think, so I went to a conference recently and I was told that, you know, we should, as women trial lawyers, present ourselves as teachers, as educators. And so we should dress the part, you know, with sweaters and skirts. And and I will tell you this. I wasn't in 100% agreement with that. I do believe that we are educators and we're perceived as nurturers and that we have a little bit more credibility with the jurors as women because they probably see their mothers or their sisters in us, depending on how we come across. But I can tell you the vast majority of the jurors that I'm in front of never had a teacher who looked like me. So me putting on a knit sweater isn't going to get me any points. So I agree with Tina that it's all about just feeling comfortable in the space that you're in. And if you are comfortable in pants and flats and that gives you confidence and power and prestige, then you do it. And if you feel comfortable in your 4-inch heels and a high ponytail, you do that too. So that's the only advice I can give on clothing. But what's Ashley and Sienna, what is your...
Lindsay.
I'm sorry, Lindsay. Sorry. I don't know what's going on with my hair right now. Baby brain, a little bit? Okay. I can own that a year and a half later. But what is it that you all do in preparation for a high stakes trial, depo? What gets you kind of together?
I think Tina said it, preparation first and foremost. And then in terms of trial, I have a routine. I wear gray and a light pink blouse for jury selection because it makes me more, I think, grounded and more feminine and not as harsh. But if I'm crossing the defendant or calling him under 776, usually I wear like blue, white top, you know, high heels, just kind of like in case I need to approach him, get up close into him, like intimidate him. But I have like my outfits picked out for the week because it's one less thing to do in the morning when I'm trying to focus. I do my dry cleaning at least for 3 weeks, so I know that I have outfits and blouses that I could switch off in case I spill coffee in the morning or anything like that, backup to the backup. And I always do PB&J from Starbucks because you can pick it up anywhere you're in trial, so I don't have to think about lunch and I can work through lunch. So
nice. I like it.
My approach has always been and I know this is odd in employment law, but I'm kind of a kill them with kindness type person. And my husband has the exact opposite approach. And he's very aggressive in a depo. And he's protecting his client. And he is just rawr. And I'm much more like, I don't know, I just take a different approach about how I attack things. But so I like to just be prepared, know my case, be right. And then just, I stay calm and just sort of, okay, sure. And then kill him in motion work and kill him in the courtroom and kill him everywhere else. But that's just my approach. And I'm like the odd mod. I'm the odd person in my firm. But that's how I like to do it. And, you know, everybody, and I think that it's comfortable in your own skin and do what works for you. Though I might take on this affirmation thing. I think that's pretty cool. I've never, you know, stepped down and gone to the bathroom and been like, I am the best. I can do this. But I think I'm going to start because I really like that.
Yeah. Like I envision like us, free trial in a huddle,
like those New Zealanders before the football matches. And they're like, you know, like I would love to reenact. Can we do that? Not now. One of these days. Yeah. We'll do it. Okay. Well, you guys, we've unfortunately run out of time.
We need a part two to this.
We need a part three and four. How about, I mean, what are we going to do? Let's do it. Let's get together soon. I definitely think that, there are people who are hungry for the information that we have. And I personally have learned a lot today. I hope we can do this again. Can I get a okay that we'll come back?
Of course. Absolutely.
Sounds good. We'll invite some more friends?
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Well, in partnership with Trial Guides, our listeners will get 15% off. So if you go to trialguides.com, enter JusticeTeam19 at checkout, and you get a discount. We want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank you, our panelists, our speakers, our guests, for being here. You guys were exceptional. I'm your host, Ibiete. I hope to be back. I hope I didn't get fired.
You rocked it.
And remember, folks, there is no sleep till justice. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, you guys. And a rock star.
And a daddy.
And a daddy.
Yeah.
No. And as I was listening, I was thinking the same thing, like, wow, you guys, this sounds so soothing. You know?
It was soothing. Everybody goes to sleep like, on our podcast. Sorry.
But yeah, I had a lot of fun, you guys. Thanks so much. But yeah, my son slammed his finger in a door, and you know, your nail dies. Yeah. It kind of gets black. And I was like, he went to school one day with the nail on, and then he came home, and it was like, your nail's gone. He's like, oh, I took it off. Like, oh my gosh. So yeah, that's my boy.
That story was hilarious. That was